Welcome, everybody. It's time once again for the next chapter with Charlie Hedges. As he explores turning the page on his life and yours. Hey, Charlie.
Hey, Paul. It's good to be here with you at OC Talk Radio, and I want to welcome all our listeners to the next chapter with Charlie. Paul, today we are in for a treat with my very special guest, Peter Ashworth. Now, I'm going to ask you to bear with me as this introduction requires a bit more time than normal. That's because Peter is far from normal. Peter's a 30-year veteran of creating companies and organizations. He's highly inspired every day to help others. He is currently the CEO and founder of Live Possible, Fearless Life, an organization that helps people live their greatest potential. Now, this is really cool. Peter has just launched the Fearless Life program for those suffering from the debilitating effects of anxiety. As someone who's experienced this level of anxiety personally, I'm going to be most interested in discovering more about Peter's new program. Did you know that Peter informed me that anxiety disorders affect the lives of 1 in 5 people in North America? Peter's Fearless Life program is a new science-based guided approach to killing anxiety. I love that, killing anxiety. I want to see what that's all about. Fearless Life incorporates the amazing new breakthrough science of neuroplasticity, which we're going to talk a lot about later. Peter is also an executive and mindset coach, which we will again discover more in the show. An interesting note on the side is that Peter also played a role in the founding of Wells of Life, the charity that you all know that I'm so deeply involved with. And finally, Peter is a husband, father of 2 accomplished college athletes, a fitness nut, an outdoor adventurer, and an artist. And I've just seen some of his art. It's quite amazing. So before we run out of time with the introduction, I thought we'd get Peter on the mic and discuss, among other things, personal life design and strategies you might use to create your next chapter. So, Peter Ashworth, welcome to the next chapter with Charlie.
Hi, Charlie. It's good to be here.
Yeah, it's great to have you. We've spent a few hours already talking together, and we resonate on so many different things, and I am quite interested. So, I'm gonna start with you playing softball. So we'll play. Usually I start with a hardball pitch.
Okay.
And this one it may turn into a hardball pitch. You call yourself, one of the things you call yourself, you're a business coach, but you also call yourself a mindset coach. I've never heard that term. Can you tell me how you help your clients develop their mindset to fit alongside their lifestyle?
Yeah, absolutely. So mindset, if you think of it in terms of life, mindset is the equivalent of a major athlete having the right perspectives, drives, understandings to play the game really well. And so we typically in life, we don't get taught a lot of the success factors that successful people understand, their perspectives, their mindsets, their worldviews on how to be successful and whatever that may mean to you, because everyone has a different definition of success. So what I do is I help people through my coaching business develop the mindset that is going to help them achieve the goals that they want to achieve. In other words, take them from where they are now to where they want to go, to give them the perspectives and worldviews that is going to actually get them there. So that's what a mindset
that.
Coach
can,
does.
Can you give me an example of what that means so we understand it?
Well, one of the first exercises I do with all of my clients is I identify their 5 top values in life. So I have a list of about 130 values I give my clients before I actually meet with them, and I ask them to identify it's on one piece of paper. On one row is the rate each of those values, the 130 of them, from 1 to 5. and then rate each of the values again on how you live them. And there's usually a massive aha. In fact, I just happened to find my own personal values sheet when I was looking around my office this morning. So it looks something like this. So you've got various columns. This is an older version that's much bigger now, but you've got things like how important is authenticity to you? How important is it that you want to change the world? How important is faith or the environment or excellent or friendship or physical appearance or things or recognition to you? So as we go through life, we have a very vague notion of what our personal values are. So if you know what your top five personal values are, every major decision you ever make in life, you should consider those five values as part of that. And that'll keep us on the straight and narrow. So what I've discovered is stress is a major debilitator in life to many, many, many people for a lot of different reasons. I've found a lot of people that are highly stressed today are living outside their personal values. They don't really know what their values are.
Oh.
They're living way outside them. Yeah. It's causing them a lot of stress.
Of course.
And so if you're a very conservative person, let me give you an example. Debt may be something that you think should be minimized. Now, if you have big credit card debt or you have a massive mortgage or you owe a lot of money, you feel very, very stressed.
Not only because you feel stressed at the situation, but because it is against your value.
Exactly.
And so it's really, really contesting with your value.
It's fighting your subconscious every minute of every day. It's fighting you. One of my major values is authenticity. When I get put in a box and I have to be somebody that I'm not really comfortable being, I feel stressed. I feel different. I don't feel myself. I feel upset. And so I need to be authentic. The longer I live my life, the more authentic I just demand myself to be. So I would never take a job that doesn't allow me to be authentic. I would never get into a relationship that doesn't allow me to be authentic. I would never hang out with people that I'm trying to impress to be like them because I'm not authentic. So you see how it kind of controls your major decisions in the direction of your life? So, you know, values are a big part of mindset. So once you know your five values, you can then say, these are the things that are most important to me in life, and I want to live these values. And so, you know, that probably aligns with the next thing, which is goal setting. So what do you want to do? Many people, well, I'm going to quote George Bernard Shaw. The reasonable man lives according to the world's standards. The unreasonable man creates his own standards in the world. Therefore, all progress is due to the unreasonable man.
That's great.
Yeah. So successful people, they have their values identified typically, not in all cases, but typically, and they go out into the world and they determine to live that way. And so once you know your values, then you can identify what you want to do in your life versus what the world is wanting you to do. So the example I use a lot is if you go out to the 405 freeway on any morning at 7:30 a.m., you'll see a lot of people, one person in a car, heading off to work, and they really don't look happy. Because they're in the grind of life, right?
Well, yeah.
First they're on the 405 freeway, but they haven't identified what they want to do. They're just kind of stuck in the world's purpose, and they've fallen into a job, a relationship, a situation, a house, whatever it may be. And there's variations for everyone, of course. But they're just not happy because they haven't identified who they are and what they want to do in life. And so it's really nothing to do with money. It's really more about what you want to be in life.
And this, you discover this, you have this list of 120 or so, you said.
Yeah, this is an old one. So you'll see I've identified mine on there.
And you put how much you value it and then how much are you actually living by it and the correlation between the two? Exactly. Or is it a total of the two numbers?
Well,
is that...
you really decide what are the values most important to you, and then you look to the next column about how you are living that value. And if you're not, if it's a very important value to you, but you're not living it, it's time for a mindset change and a lifestyle change. So that may be small, tiny steps, or it may be, you know, after I achieve these milestones in the next 6 months or a year or 2 years, then I'll move on to that. But that's a big part of developing a mindset that is focused and going in a specific direction.
I'm reticent in telling you this, but I created and I'll try to do this very briefly, a values assessment instrument myself. Mm-hmm. And what I did was say, I want you to think of somebody you really admire, preferably living, but it doesn't have to be living, and write a paragraph. Why do you admire that person? What are the qualities of that person that you admire that you think are really great? And then go back and circle things that come to mind that say, these are especially important to me. And I tell them, you just identified your values.
Well, I love that. Yeah, I may have to steal that idea from you. That's a really good idea.
Yeah, it really works. Yeah. It really works, and these are your values, because it really is important, I agree with you, to take a look at your values. And when we talk about mindset, I think your mindset is so much more important than just your talent and your area of expertise. That your mindset, you know, in sports, we call it your makeup, you know, really will say, are you going to be successful at what you're attempting to do, or are you not? So I love this idea of this mindset coach. That's a great idea. And then you said, you went on to say, after you develop your values, you go to develop your goals. And that leads us to the next question I have in mind, and talking about life's purpose. You know, that's kind of a big deal right now, people talking about life's purpose, and I think it's happening across the board of all generations. It's not just the old guys like me.
Right.
It's young guys are asking it. But my first question is, do you believe there really is such a thing as a life's purpose?
I believe there is, and I believe we should decide what it is early on and go out and do that. Now, the problem with it is most of us live in a very confused state. As we talked earlier, as humans, we struggle to think much past 30 days. You know, so when you're trying to develop a life purpose and you're stuck in, I got to pay the mortgage and I've got to get the groceries tomorrow and I've got to get the car fixed and I got to get my kids through school or in retirement, there are just so many things that just kind of smother us that we rarely, when I say we, I'm talking about Americans, we really take time to stop and think what we want to do. So here's an exercise I use with a lot of my clients.
Ooh, cool. I love exercises.
So I say to them, let's do it with you. Charlie, you're 85 years old. You're not, but I'm saying, imagine if you're 85 years old.
Not hard to imagine. It's not that far away.
Okay. You're sitting on a porch. You're looking out over a view, and who is on your left? You're thinking back about your life. How has your life been? Was it great? Was it incredible? So describe the view that you have, right? So I'm not going to have you do this because it's a good half an hour. So that tells you, like, first of all, do I have a view or am I looking at a side of a parking garage, you know? If I have a view, I've done well enough. So therefore, I need to get that organized. Who's on my left? Who's my partner, my wife, my husband? Who's there? Is nobody there? Am I on my own? Has it been a great relationship? Is it the love of my life? Or is it somebody that I just kind of went through life with? And then I think back about my life. Was it a great life? Because we can identify with feelings a lot more than we can with logic. So if you start to connect with how you feel at 85, was it a great life? Was it satisfactory? And then it kind of goes from there. You start thinking about, was it a career? Did I live my values? Were they authentic? Did I have spirituality? Did I get important things done? And the big question, did I make a difference? Did I change the world in some way that gives me a legacy to say, hey, I'm 85 and I'm pretty happy about where I'm at? Or am I stuck in fear? Am I stuck in regrets and doubts? Geez. See what I'm saying?
Yeah, that's terrible.
So it gives you the chance to say, well, I may be 25 or 35 or 45 or 55. I want to get to that point where I feel really good about my life. So what do I need to do today to work towards that, and gets you starting to think about, what do I really want to do with my life? It's not a career. It's not a pile of money in a bank or a fancy car. At 85, you probably don't care about those things so much. But it's, you know, am I on my way to be that? So that's a big part of how you choose your purpose, I think.
Does that differ from legacy?
It's very closely related, because legacy, when you get to be 85, you do a lot of thinking about your legacy that you don't do when you're 25 or 35, because you're just out having a good time. But 85, when you look back on your life, was it a great life or was it not? Those are important questions to somebody at 85.
They really are. And I look back, you know, and you use the word, did I change the world or change the people around me? You know, the verb I like to use instead of change is impact.
Mm-hmm.
Did I make an impact?
Yeah.
And it's and I look at legacy as, I think I've talked about this on the show before, it's, I look at legacy as not so much about me, but about the actions that I did. Did my actions actually impact, and does that change a particular part of society or a particular person or some event, and did I make some kind of impact on it? And boy, you know, I feel fortunate I've gone through that thing, and I feel fortunate that I feel like I've led a life that I've had an opportunity, and I'm fortunate, I'm very lucky I've led an opportunity to, had an opportunity to make impact here and there, and it's very self-gratifying.
Well, I would say you've done even better than that. You have an adventurous life. You have a life full of creativity. You have a life full of love. You have people around you that love you. You love them. I know that your son, you're very proud of him. These are all legacy things that you will look back when you're 85 and go, I got that part right.
How do you get people starting to think about that earlier?
Awareness. So we're talking about it now. Hopefully people are listening and they're thinking, huh, maybe I should be thinking about at 85. So even if you're, my kids are 20, I had this discussion with them just over the weekend. So at 85, you're thinking about your life. They're like, what? You know? And so, but, you know, it's just awareness and it's front of mind and it's like, huh, that's a good point. You know? So I don't think a 20-year-old's going to run out there tomorrow and think, wow, I've really got to set the world on fire. So times are ticking. But they will keep that in mind. And that's kind of a parent discussion with a kid saying, these are the things you should be thinking about. And that's legacy in itself. Think about your great-grandparents. How well do you know them? Not much, right? You know, yeah, our grandparents, we kind of like hang out with them, but our great-grandparents or our great-great-grandparents, what legacy did they leave? Probably a lot in terms of DNA, developing values in your family, you know, developing kind of geographic areas where you live or even countries where you live. I was born in New Zealand and I live in the United States now. So, you know, that changed my legacy. You know, I have a much more American values now than I did living in New Zealand. So
right.
These all have an impact.
Do you think legacy or life purpose evolves as we go along?
Absolutely.
Because what I thought may have been my life purpose at 20 years old with a shoulder length hair as a full blown hippie is it's a little bit different now than it was. So I find it's evolving all the time. Although it is there's a core, maybe that's the values that you are getting at, that I think I like, that I've not thought of them in that term. Maybe it's the core values really don't change a lot. The core values, you know, they're pretty...
They're consistent, yeah.
Yeah, yeah. You know, there may be a couple I'll add as I get married. Then, you know, I start thinking differently about children and a marriage. And so those core values begin to come in. But our core values, you know, your core values of authenticity and of love and of serving.
Right.
Those are who you are.
They don't change.
Yeah. Those are who you are created to be. There are some people that have not identified their life's purpose or their core values, and they're sort of stuck in the grind of the treadmill of life, and they determine they want to redesign their lifestyle, but they have no clue how to begin. Do they need to get a coach? Is this something they can do on their own? What if they can't afford a coach?
A coach is, you and I are both coaches, so we know what the methodology for coaching really is. It is to help that individual come up with their own thinking. So what a coach would do is create awareness. But coaches aren't cheap. So the first thing to do is, you know, start having awareness. I always feel like everyone's on autopilot. Nobody's thinking deeply. Nobody's really thinking about anything that we're talking about now. And, you know, you suddenly, you're 85, and you go like, wow, I didn't take time to think about anything like this. So just having awareness is a big part of it. So somebody listening right now may have never thought about this. So that person might suddenly start thinking, wow, I wonder what I want out of life. Self-help books are the biggest aisle at most bookstores. Amazon, I think I last looked it up, had 144,000 self-help books. There's self-help books in every way, shape, and form.
Yes.
I also find in terms of personal development or self-help, we're all on a journey. We're all in different places. And we may be looking for certain answers in certain areas. That later in life we'll be looking for different answers.
I was just distracted for a second, so I lost my train of thought. This person who is now beginning to think that they would like to discover some sort of life purpose, maybe do they begin with sort of an evaluation of their values, and what is important to you in life? And what would you like to see have done?
Yeah, I would definitely start with my values. So I'll email you the sheet if anyone wants to get hold of you and get that. You feel free to send it out to them.
Okay, great.
Yeah,
great.
Absolutely.
We'll put it on the show notes.
Yeah.
Yeah, I developed a system a long time ago that I called People, Passion, Purpose, and Power. And it's, Passion, Purpose, People, and Power. What do you do in your life that keeps you passionate? That keeps you excited? You know, with me, it was art, it was reading, it was doing a number of different things. And then purpose, what is my purpose? What am I here to this? And it was very specific. And what am I here to deliver? How do I deliver? And what is important for me to deliver? And people, what are the important people in my life? And power had to do with my faith. And where am I getting my ultimate power? Am I getting it from, I don't know where, but, you know, mm-hmm. for me, it was getting it from God.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, incorporating those four attributes sort of gave people a direction in where we wanted to go. We need to, time is moving on. We're going to take a quick break because I have a transition that I'm really excited about going into. So let's take a brief break, and then we'll go into the transition that I have in mind. Hi, this is Charlie Hedges, and you're listening to The Next Chapter with Charlie. And I am here with Peter Ashworth, who is an expert in just about everything I can think of. So, and he's developed some really interesting programs, and we're going to talk about one of these programs right now that is not launched. He's talking about launching it early next week, and I think it's really important because it's a subject that is so prominent in my own life, and the subject is anxiety. I did not know that 1 in 5 people in all of North America suffer from this disorder. That's 20%.
73 million people.
73 million people. Well, what's up with that? I mean, you know, it wasn't so in my parents' generation a few years ago. When did this start? What's the sort of incubus of all of this?
There's not one specific thing. It's basically anxiety is basically a prehistoric developed survival mechanism. Is really where what anxiety. We all have that capability.
For the hunter gatherer, just.
Yeah, well, survival was the big thing.
Right.
So our brain is really the number one role of our brain is to keep us alive. And so it functions very, very well with fear. So anything that might kill us, it instantly goes into a mode that it is trying to protect and save us. Now, what happens with modern life? Because let me just kind of go back to that. So if you want to go back to the early days with bears and people who are trying to take your stuff and raid the encampments or the villages, whatever, you had to be hyper-vigilant. But there was no power in those days. The lights went out at like as soon as the sun went down. You were lighting candles. You were sleeping well. You were out working all day in the fields or, you know, riding a horse or whatever it was. And you had an outlet for basically everything. Plus, the complexities of life were not what they are today. So fast forward to today, you have a lot of reasons. The number one reason everyone always goes to is social media, that I feel bad because everyone looks so successful and beautiful on social media, and I don't feel it. But the thing is, nobody posts on social media unless they feel good about their picture. So, and some people will take 30 pictures and doctor one up and put that up, and that's the picture of the day. So social media has the 24/7 on society that we live in right now has a lot to blame for it. You know, you're watching screens, you're up, you're out late, you're getting up early, you're doing all these things that our brains have not really caught up with yet. So they're on full time. Then you add heightened expectations. So you need to be a doctor or a lawyer or an IT specialist, or you need to marry a handsome, wealthy man, or you need to be the most successful student in Harvard, or you need to be the president, or you need to own a, you know, these are all expectations. The fastest growing segment of anxiety in the U.S. right now is 7 years old to 14 years old. It's just a massive crisis happening. Kids are staying home from school. They're hyperventilating. They're having all kinds of medical problems.
No way.
Yeah, it's the fastest growing group of that. And it's because of all the things I just said. The expectations are way over the top. So if you think of anxiety as a fear-based, initial fear-based phenomena, that is, your brain is saying, watch out, you're in trouble here, that's really what anxiety starts with. An anxiety disorder, of which there are probably, I think there's like 7 or 8 of them. There's all kinds of PTSD and all kinds of other things. They're all anxiety disorders. Basically, your brain gets stuck in its fear mode, and it starts to ruminate and worry about things that it can't shut it off. And the reason it can't shut it off is because anxiety is located in the subconscious, which is about 90% of all of our thinking. So our brain, our conscious brain, can process 40 bits of information a second. A lot of that is eyesight. that we're tracking a lot of different things. So 40 bits of information a second, you would say that's pretty good, right? That's processing a lot of information. Our subconscious brain processes 11 million bits of information a second. So it is the most advanced computer in the universe. It's the most powerful thing we know of in the universe. So your subconscious brain processing 11 million bits of information a second is working really hard, but you don't know it.
But you can't access it.
You can't really access it without a lot of deep therapy or analysis or whatever. So there's, you know, anxiety has been treated with two things for since the 1930s and 50s. I say 30s and 50s are different. Sigmund Freud, psychoanalysis, that became right. A big deal, that you talk things through and eventually you work it out. So you may sit on a therapist's couch for a couple of months, or you may be there for 10 years or 20 years. That's a common understanding of psychoanalysis. A lot of it is going back to your childhood and thinking things in a much deeper level, trying to access that subconscious.
And to some degree of success.
Absolutely. Psychotherapy makes you feel good. It gives you a chance to get in touch with yourself and your own thoughts. It's really, it's very, very good process. The other thing is psychopharmaceuticals, of which America is by far the biggest developer and provider and market for drugs in the world, especially with regard to our brain. So we use drugs for everything from aspirin, Tylenol, all the way through SSRIs and all the mood drugs. And, you know, marijuana is really a mood enhancer. So, we're really big into that. So therapy and medication have been the two ways to treat anxiety up until some recent advancements.
Yeah, and you've come across some recent advances, but I have to say a book that was written, oh gosh, Peter, I want to say 20 years ago. I never read the book. I just love the title. After 100 years of therapy, are we any better off?
Certainly not as a species, but maybe as an individual.
You know, I didn't read the book because the title just told me everything I needed to know of the book. But you're talking about a whole new way of dealing with anxiety, aren't you, in this thing called neuroplasticity?
Yes, that's exactly what I'm talking about. So
yeah, I'm really interested in that.
Yeah, so let me kind of give you the big picture understanding of neuroplasticity. So our brain has 86 million neurons in it. They have up to 5,000 different attachments. So we can have, if you think of it as a roadway, you know, you're talking about these are roads and then we connect roads to other roads, et cetera, et cetera. So our brain has these millions and billions of neural pathways. So you can have up to 300 trillion different pathways in your brain.
You've lost me.
It's hard to even imagine, isn't it?
It's inconceivable, yeah.
300 trillion different pathways. So our brain, because of its need to keep us alive, it's constantly reevaluating our environment, the way we think. It's trying to keep us alive in many different ways. And so neuroplasticity was discovered in the 1980s. A professor up at University of San Francisco, Mrzenich, he kind of named it neuroplasticity because he developed looking in the world of hearing aids. He did a lot of brain studies and he suddenly realized our brain was not hardwired, which has been general thinking for the last few hundred years, that we're born with it. You know, we can adjust it a little bit here and there, but the brain we've got is the brain we've got. That is completely false. Our brain is plastic. It can be molded and shaped to be whatever we want. And there's a lot of science on it. There's over 2,600 scientific validated studies on neuroplasticity that all agree that our brain is plastic and that we can change it. So if you think of anxiety as a physiological issue versus a genetic or a chemical imbalance, so really what you're doing is you're rewiring your brain to be in a fear mode way too much. Is what anxiety really is, because our brain has multiple different areas in it that each serve different functions. And so there's a great saying in neuroplasticity, neurons that fire together wire together. And that is really about the more you use your brain a certain way, the more your brain will become that. So anxiety is kind of a self-fulfilling prophecy.
So it's like setting habits?
Yeah. It's just thinking. It's really adjusting the way you think. So I've spent the last 3 years doing really deep research, reading hundreds of books and reading a lot of medical reports and interviewing experts around the country and the world. And the great news about neuroplasticity is what causes anxiety can also undo anxiety. And so what I've developed is a program that actually helps you undo anxiety, which is really just fear-based thinking, hardwired into your head, well, soft-wired into your head. That's the book by Michael Merzenich, is a great book called Softwired. It's the leading book out there on anxiety. There's one other one, too, I will recommend if anyone's interested. It is called Hardwiring Happiness by Rick Hansen, who's also a great author of that as well. So basically, my program, it works quickly. In 90 days, you should feel a significant difference. Within a year, you should have lost, well, I say killed most of your anxiety. We still need a little anxiety. We all need
sure.
it. You know, you don't want to
sure.
be not worrying about anything whatsoever. That would not be good. But, yeah, it's a program that is online. I'm very excited to launch it.
And it's starting, you're thinking, this
It's going out, starting out
December
Monday.
December 3rd?
Yeah, it'll be going out Monday, and we're hoping to bring people in. It's online, and I'm very, very excited about it. It's been a lot of work to get
it. Well,
right
I want to get it on the show notes, how people can get a hold of it.
If you look up livepossible.life is the website. But I will send you some information on it, Charlie, and if anyone, if you can post it on the show notes, then they can access it through there. It might be the best way. Yeah.
So you know what I'm seeing on this fear-based life? We talked about it as a basic survival mechanism, but, you know, if you look at the Maslow chart of development and, you know, the first level is survival, but the next level is self-esteem and self-confidence. Fear really is at play in both of those very strongly.
Exactly. Yeah.
So fear has a place in just about every part of our life, and it's a very, you know, I've not thought of it until recently. I'm reading a book about it right now, that it really does have an influence on a great majority of our life.
I have a concept called the seven levels of conscious thinking, and I track how we can choose to think at all these different levels. Level one is complete fear. You're just in fear of everything and everyone. You're a deer in the headlights. You just can't control everything in life. And people like that have a lot of anxiety. Now, the bad thing about anxiety is it often leads to health problems, medical problems. Anxiety attacks the weakest part of your body, typically an organ. We have 68 organs in our body, and it'll attack the weakest one. And it's just because that organ is under fight or flight mode 24/7 and just wears out, and it gets exhausted, and it just starts to fail. And so people living at what I call level one, they're just having all kinds of health problems. They're having relationship problems. They're having every kind of problem you can imagine. So I kind of track through my seven levels of conscious thinking. And that's survival mode. Fight or flight mode is the next level. It's fear, intimidation. About 70 to 80% of all managers and corporations are thinking at level two, which is really intimidating people to do what they want. That's why very few companies, and there are some great companies with great cultures is what I'm talking about, but most companies, they don't get the culture because leaders are out there just not creating it. So, but as you work your way up, you get happier, you feel more successful all the way through the different seven.
And this is in sort of a online workbook session.
I haven't put it online, but you know, I do use it with all my clients, so
I certainly can
send that to you as well. But I just want to say that neuroplasticity is known as the greatest medical advancement in the last 100 years. It will impact our lives as we're discovering it, learning how to use it more. It's going to make us smarter, more intelligent, happier. It's going to make us less anxious if we work it out. As a species, we should be able to think better. So it's kind of a cool thing, and it's very early on right now. So for those of you out there who haven't heard of neuroplasticity, it's kind of like what I call the yellow Volkswagen syndrome. You never saw one until you owned one. Now you see them everywhere, you know.
That's cool. So today we've talked about, let me see if I'm going to try to rehearse this mentally. We've talked about values. We've talked about life purpose. We've talked about legacy. We've talked about anxiety and a new methodology which you've created that can kill anxiety. My final question for today is, how does someone upgrade his or her life given all of these options that we've given them? You know, we could have overwhelmed them with a lot of things. What would you say would be a great starting point for someone?
That's the $64,000 question. That's why this 144,000 self-help books, people buy them, but they do nothing with them, typically. If you go to most houses, you'll see self-help books on the bookshelves, and they're either not even opened or half-read or not read much or whatever, because life takes over. The thing is, determine the biggest question I think you can ask yourself is, what are my values? To me, that's the start of everything. If I can work out my values, it's going to change the way I think about pretty much everything. So just starting on the values, work out what your top five values. Don't have 10 or 15 or 20. You've got to bring it down to five, because five is, you can remember five, and you can do that.
Yeah, and I think some kind of your tool or the little brief thing that I suggested, some sort of tool that can help you do that, because if you just go through like the Boy Scout motto and you pick out five out of that, that's, you know, they've got to be something that's in your core and that resonates deeply with you.
Yeah, I'll put, I tell you what, I'll put my values sheet up on my website. I'll send you a link to it. You can put it in the show notes. And if anyone wants to download it, they can just download it as a PDF and do that.
That'd be great.
Yeah, it's no problem. Another thing that I just finally did, it took me about 30 years. I just developed my own vision and mission statement. And it's short, brief, and easy to do. And that's kind of my North Star. And if that is shining out there and I'm clear on what it is, then that helps me as well. So those are a couple of ideas for you there.
Well, I see they're brief. Why don't we close and you tell us what your mission and vision is?
Yeah, my vision is I am here on this earth right now to use my gifts to help others live their greatest potential. That's my purpose. That's my gift. That's what drives me every day. That's when I'm at my best. That's what makes me happiest and truly inspires me. That's my vision statement. Now, I still take out the trash. I have to clean up the dog poop every morning when I walk the dog. I have to do all those things. But this is my North Star, and it's what decides a lot of big decisions for me.
You know, and I noticed in there, it's really a service-oriented. Other people are what matters, and you just can't go wrong with that. That is such a powerful North Star to look at, is that service, caring about helping other people in whatever way you can, because all of us, no matter where you are right now, can help the person next to you.
Exactly.
Peter, thank you so much for being on the show. It's been fun. We are kindred spirits in this journey together. And I also want to thank all our listeners for tuning in to The Next Chapter with Charlie. And be sure to check out our website, thenextchapter.life. That's LIFE. And I noticed that Peter also has a .life. He's the only other .life that I know. That's really great. So until next, this is Charlie Hedges signing off. I want to say bye for now. Thanks, Peter.
Thank you, Charlie.